All right. And we're back on Bold Movers and Shakers. It's Alexis Ray, and I am delighted to present to you today a most unusual, unique, driven man, James Roberts. He is a host of the Mindset Athlete podcast and is a transformation coach. And he has walked enough walks and talks and actually lives it out loud. You're laughing at me. You can laugh at me. I don't care. James, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Alexis. Thanks again for having me on.
It's a pleasure. Absolutely a pleasure. I probably should have hit record an hour ago because we've been yakking it up that long. The time flies talking to you. There's a lot of great stories in there. But one of the things that really struck me about you is the way you're embracing how powerful a belief system is and how it can often, if it's not, I don't know if it's addressed or not in the arena of athletics, I would assume so. And yet what I'm hearing you say to me is, and it really, I mean, without that in place, what happens? What happens with a person and their belief systems? Let's just jump right into that.
Well, I think you asked a poignant question there in terms of it from in the athletic realm. It's probably not because the athlete themselves, and I did talk to you about this off air, that the inner belief system, when a momentary lapse and self-doubt actually does occur, they'll look at it and kind of look at it haphazardly and say, is that helpful? No, and discard it. Whereas in terms of maybe the general populace, they won't look at it in a positive light, so to speak. They'll take on board. Well, they'll start to question it. Well, is it true? Is it true? And you start playing that around in your heads over a long period of time.
Like a belief system is what I believe really. Is it really true? Is that what you're saying? Is it true? Is it true? Yeah.
And it becomes human nature. It's very much, you start playing this story over and over in your head long enough, it becomes fact.
Yeah. So in your work as a transformation coach, do you work predominantly with athletes or is it a mix?
To answer that question, Alex, it's a bit of a mix at the moment. I think the athlete themselves is probably a little bit easier because it's going back into my background in terms of coming from athletic background that I've had. Yeah. So you could question them. Probably sometimes it'll be a little bit harder than you can be on the general populace because they're used to it. They're used to not, so to speak, questioning somebody's authority, albeit their experience as a coach. Because it's like, well, it's either the highway, it's my way or the highway in terms of, whereas I would probably, now that I've retired and come down a level, I would question that at times because it's like, well, you can have that dialogue with the coach because, okay, not at that particular moment in time, but you could say once you finish practice and whatnot and say, well, why do we do that? And if the coach can give you a valid reason, you've got more respect for that person because it's like, well, there was a reason behind the madness. You're not doing it just for the sake of it. Whereas I think some athletes, and I'll include myself included, we'll push ourselves anyway. You don't need somebody to push you to the realms that I got to because that was a passion of mine. Some might say the dedication and others might say an obsession and go as far as you're crazy and it was lunacy to put your body through those extremes.
Tell me about that. I want to know because honestly, it's very, if what I just heard you say, I don't mean to wag my finger at you. I feel like I've discovered something here. If what I think you just said was you got places that were really amazing and you did or didn't have a coach. I heard that you didn't.
No, what you mean from a perspective of, well, I did in the senses of it being a sporting coach, we had access to.
Go ahead, dear.
We had access to strength and conditioning, nutritionists, psychologists, and you name it. Okay, I didn't access all of those. Psychologists more so when I was doing my university degree, but that was more to facilitate where I was at that particular moment in time and then very much relate it back into the academia. Whereas if I had to put in an ounce of actual resources that I do now, 10 years ago, okay, this is paradoxical a little bit, would I have been a little bit better athlete? Possibly, but we'll never know. So that's
something
I've got to live with. So it's I've had a successful career, and I think the definition of success that I had when I started out in my athletic career, what is it, about almost 18 years ago to now, is night and day. The actual belief system in terms of what constitutes success, and I think everybody's actual definition will be slightly different.
18 years ago, what were you, 6 when you started?
No, I would have been 15, 16.
You're so young looking. My God, that's awesome. Yeah, I know if you're just listening to this on audio, you don't have the benefits. So jump over to YouTube and check this guy out because, I mean, granted, you're an athlete, but Jesus, you look young. I don't know how you do it, but keep doing it.
It's early May as we're talking. It will be my birthday in 9 days, so I'll only be, I say 33. I had a very big momentary lapse in terms of turning 30. That was a difficult one for me, but I guess it's everybody's got this the speed bump, so to speak, as to the next era that they turn into.
I want to comment on that. There's actually a phenomenon. Now I'm going to use the truth. When there's a full moon, we know that there's more crime. We know people go a little bit wacky. Like the planets affect us, right? We know that. Okay, so that was my lead-in because, yeah, between the ages of 28 and 31, there is something called a Saturn return. And what that means is Saturn doesn't come backward. It's just a way to describe it. But what it does is it magnifies what you're going to do. And it's, you know, so hard to go through that age, those 3-4 years, because it is demanding you to revisit who you are, what you're going to do, what's next. That's why it's almost traumatic for some people to turn 30. And it's not that it's old, because once you're 35 and you look back and you're like, dang, I thought I had it all handled when I was 20. I didn't know shit. And now I really see that. And this phenomenon happens again. So you get to look forward to more in about 20 years. Yeah. And it happens again. And it causes us to assess, reassess, get rid of stuff. You know, and part of that could be old beliefs and not just old shoes, you know, you're just throwing stuff out left and right because you need to, you know, you have to, clear space for it. So, let's introduce some of the athleticism that you have about you. So people know a little bit more about you then.
The brief one for you, Alexis, is I competed for Great Britain at countless world championships and 2 Paralympics to name a few, but I'll go in a little bit greater detail. I competed in, off the top of my head now, 3 world championships in rowing, so 2006, 2007, and 2009.
Wow.
I had another world championships in volleyball in 2010, and then we've got Europeans in 2011, and then it's smidgen in between all that, the Paralympics in 2008 and the Paralympics in 2012 in London.
Wow, dude, you just don't stop. Wow, I'm looking at your profile picture on Facebook right now. It looks like that's a basketball in your hand.
That's what I do now. Yeah.
Is there anything you don't do? Oh my gosh.
Well, there's only been one sport that I won't say necessarily didn't succeed at, but one that didn't sit well with me because of injury. And that was, kayaking. And that's the only one that I've not, so to speak, mastered. So it'd be, oh God, how many sports is there actually? Basketball, volleyball, rowing, swimming, and then before I actually went, you could say professional, I did sport leading up into swimming. So from the age of, how was that being?
I gotta close my mouth.
I did 10 pin bowling from the age of 10, I think I was 10 until I was about 13, and then I had to make a decision because I was doing, there was an overlap with swimming and bowling, so I had to say, well, swimming is going to possibly take me more and be able to make me more competitive. So I switch
over to
make that the sport of choice.
So would you please explain to the listeners about the about why this is so remarkable? Because they can't see you. So they don't know.
Oh, you mean in terms of disability? Yeah, but I don't think of it as adverse.
Because I don't see you as disabled in any way, shape, or form, bro. But this is why it's so remarkable, guys.
I think it's because how I brought up. It's in terms of if we go all the way back before I was born, my mother was told by the radiographer that because of the amount of bones that I'm missing in my left leg, I wouldn't be able to walk. So I think because I wasn't told that until I was, I think I asked the question when I was a teenager.
So you just rose up to the expectation that you were going to be fine.
And so things took a little bit longer. So crawling took a slightly bit longer. Walking took a slightly bit longer. I had to have extra aids, albeit, what's it called? Walker, but you know, like old people have. I can't think of the word of it.
Yeah, it's a walker.
To be able to get around the house with my leg. Slowly but surely. Elementary school. I had that sense of, we could call it fortitude, towards things and trying to come up with a solution for every problem that arose. And I've been very much like that until about 6 months ago when I had problems with mental health. That's the only time where I've actually thought of myself being in an adverse situation. It's like, because I've not been, so to speak, been in control of the situation. Yeah. And that's a very difficult term to actually use, because from what we talked about off air with the sport, I'm not totally in control of my own destiny, but I'm all right with that. So I think because of the notion and the stigmatization we have towards mental health, and that's changing by the minute, every single day, it's changing people's actual ideas, because more and more people are coming out to talk about it. And well, very much even in the UK as we speak, more and more athletes are saying they've either suffered with anxiety or depression, and this is how they've actually dealt with it. And actually the medication itself has been worse for them, because it's actually given them that numbness and they have no feeling of joy or sadness whatsoever. They've kind of got this actual nothingness. So
range.
I think
everything so strange.
So I think with me,
the loss,
it was never so much like that, but, and I thank my family for being very supportive in that time I was in that low point, because they had to endure some frustrating times. You're thinking, gosh, James, you're putting a lot of not heartache, but a lot of stress on an individual, on a loved one, because you can't take a step back. Whereas I think once slowly and surely I got better and was actually starting to question things, and I think to definitely speaking about it with counselors and things like that, they would say, go back to, well, what did you do that made you used the term unique, what made you different when you were in the sporting realm? And that helped, because it'd be that inner belief system that you were going to do everything in your power to do what you want to get in life, and you could care less what others. So I think bit by bit I regained my confidence. So we talked about the notion of, because I worked in education for a little bit over the last 18 months, and that notion is very, how would he word it, it can be very frustrating and very draining at times, because you're taking on other people's problems. And because my family included very much those type of people, we people pleasers, so to speak, you take on board people's things and you go home with it. Whereas I think if I'd actually spoken to my father, who's an ex-counselor, he's kind of got both sides of the coin and say, well, James, yes, on the one hand, yeah, that's good. It's good in a way that you are able to help people, but you can't solve everybody's problems, because once they leave the school and go home, you have no control on their lives. So I think it was very much of that notion, well, you need to, the analogy of, you kind of use a house method or an apartment complex would probably be easier. You come out of their complex, you can take them out of the hallway so that they see light, but once I'm going in through my door, you're not coming in here, and I'm locking the door behind me, kind of analogy. So you have that kind of not safety blanket, but it's like a buffer zone. It's like, I'll help you up to so much, but your problems, I don't want them in my headspace, so to speak. So I think it was a very poignant conversation we have, and it was a very deep one that actually helps. It's like, and I think slowly but surely, I think that confidence reignited within myself, and that dialogy that I shared with you in terms of when people would question, well, you haven't been successful in your athletic career. So I would say to the kids that said that to me, well, come back to me when you've made a national team and we can have a discussion.
Boom. Give me a hard one or go away. Oh, well done. God. You had mentioned something, and I don't mean to breeze past the mental health part, because I do want to pick that back up, because that's really important to me too. But earlier, before we ran the tape, you mentioned that your grandparents said what about being an athlete?
Oh no, that was my aunt and uncle. Because they're more old school in terms of, and I'll put some context into this, because yes, up until, oh God, what would it be, the 1996 Olympic Games in Atlanta, athletics was seen very much as an amateur profession. So I think because they saw it as that, there is no realms of, well, you can't succeed in that because there's no money into it. It's like, well, we kind of fast forward to what would it have been, about 20 years later, funding's in place. Athletes are paid to do that as a profession. They don't have to have a job on the side. Well, not even, sure, so to speak. Sure. That was what it was. It was part and parcel. They had to have a full-time job, sure, and do their athletic career, right, as well. So crazy.
I'm sorry, hon. I'm listening. I'm so sorry. I've got to, I'm just going to close this out. Somebody's trying to reach me. So sorry about that. Go ahead.
So in terms of, I commend them, and I kind of very, very grateful for every athlete that had to come with like the predecessors to me, because it gave me a footing to be able to excel in the passion that I wanted to do. So I think,
which part were you grateful for? The challenge that they said to you, or?
No, I mean, I'm grateful for the athletes that came before us who had to actually endure that hardship. In terms of,
oh boy, yeah,
the family members, is I like I said to you before we started recording, I very much, how I've been brought up is, you're going to listen to somebody's opinion, whether or not you take that on board is up to you. Which I very much, well, I was like that. I was like, well, I'm going to hear you out. I don't agree with it, so I'm going to go and do what makes me happy. And I think you speak to them once I make that the career, they could see the dedication and actually the willingness to, I won't necessarily say win, but succeed in what I wanted to do. They could see it. It's like, well, the dedication is there.
Yeah.
You're going to do it as a job. I think it's because, not necessarily I was going to let my family down or where I come from down, sure, or I think it was, I wouldn't go as deep as saying letting myself down. I'm probably my harshest critic at times with sport, and I have, through meditation, taken a step back and say, well, there's no point being angry all the time if I don't do this. Anything. I know other teammates will get frustrated. Oh, why have you missed? It's like, calm down. In terms of the actual magnitude of sports, not life or death. In terms of, yes, there is at that level where I was at, there's money on the line, people jobs. Yeah, we understand that. And I've talked to guests in terms of coaches I've had, in terms of, well, what was I actually like as an athlete at that time? So that's quite humbling and put myself in a vulnerable state, because that is common knowledge to the general populace. Well, James was like this in his career, in his 20s and his late teens. I was like, well, okay. It's quite nice to get it from another person's perspective, as terms of, well, what was I actually like as an individual back then?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, observers see so much more than the participant themselves. Yeah. So two things you mentioned earlier, mental health, and also that you're even in the education system, are you, as a speaker, whatever it is that you're doing in the education system. I didn't pick that up yet, but I'd like to explore that, see what's going on with you in that area.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit, let's kind of wrap up the mental health thing that's going on, and bringing awareness to and about that, and acceptance. Thank God we're doing this now.
Well, I think, Alexis, for me, there's three bouts of it that actually happened in my life, and people are actually very, what's the word I want to use? I can't think of the word. Surprise I use, but I probably could use a more exacerbated answer to put it, because they don't expect me to say that I've had to overcome those issues, because I come across as this very confident person. But I think generally, that's generally the person that suffers with anxiety. Well, not anxiety, but mental health in general, more so because it's generally those people, be it comedians, we'll kind of lump everybody into one bubble in terms of entertainment, generally suffers with that because they're having to portray a certain way and not always showing them their true selves. But to come back to my point in terms of where these actually arose, and they're all really about around body confidence, really. The early stage.
Around what? Sorry?
Body confidence.
Body confidence. Okay. I hadn't heard those two words put together.
Well, in terms of, what's the first one occurred, I would say, gosh, when I was very young. And I think it's because of overhearing people say to my mother, more specifically, what has she done to her son for him to look like that? So I think it's that one you kind of question, well, I wouldn't have thought my parents would want to mutilate me because they're loving parents.
But what could they possibly meant by that? Who knows?
But what comes into people's minds, you never. But for somebody to think something and then to say it is two different things, because everybody has those predisposed ideas where you have a thought process, but it takes a different kettle of fish to, in terms of actually then say it out loud. So I don't know, but this is going back a long, long time. But then I never had the idea of. Well, that's probably very, very destructive, and what actual impact that's going to have on my mother's well-being from a mental state. But why would you want to do that to your only son? So that would be the first occasion.
What were they accusing her of? I can't imagine. That's craziness. Oh, hang on. I didn't mean it that way, because we're talking about mental health. I shouldn't use that term. But anyway, I'm baffled. Go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
And then the second one, Alexis, that it kind of arose would have been, I think, my sophomore or junior year in high school. And I had this complex idea of not wanting to wear shorts when we were in about this time of year, spring, summertime, in the school environment. And I was, because my parents being in the forces, I went to American high school. So that put a little bit of context for the American audience would be able to, whereas most Commonwealth countries have to wear a uniform. So they wouldn't necessarily get to have choice in what they wear.
Right.
But where it baffled me,
yeah,
and probably it's still to this day,
yeah,
I would have no problem wearing it in a sporting field of play whatsoever. So you're thinking, on the one hand, you're comfortable wearing shorts and have no care in the world to what people have towards you in physical education and being in that capacity. But then you have it, on the other hand, six other periods, I think, for me at that time. In school, I would have a problem with it. And it wasn't until my probably late junior year, senior year, it dawned on me. Well, and probably took a step back and actually reflected on the idea where I was at. Say, well, who is it actually affecting? It's not affecting any of your peers. It's affecting solely you. So what are you going to do about it, and how are we going to solve this problem? And from that day on, be it, okay, weather determinants, I could care less. I wear shorts when I feel like it. So if generally people won't have a problem. It'd be generally, but in passing, kids would be inquisitive. Generally the parents that's pulling, reining them back in. You can't say that. I could care less. I'm quite happy to be open and for somebody to ask me a question. If I'd be surprised if it was actually a different one for a change.
And you should be, because depression is unexpressed emotion. And that repressed emotion, it festers out somewhere. Right? Fester, boom. Something bothers us, we push it away, and then boom, it's going to blow up somewhere. And so you have to let it out somehow. It doesn't mean you get to kick the cat and, you know, annihilate roommates. But it happens. But, you know, to encourage that outward expression and really owning it, and that way it doesn't bubble up and become this muck that shows up later is, in my humble opinion, the only way to not be depressed. Because if you're going to squish all that down, there's a limited container here, y'all, and it's going to come out the sides. And it's going to create, and if you're not allowed to express it, especially if you're in a family situation, I grew up this way. Absolutely not allowed to. I mean, I could get, you know, plunked in the head, and if I looked upset about it, I got it again. It's like I wasn't allowed to react, and then you turn it on yourself. If you don't take care of it, guys, you'll turn it on yourself, because the environment doesn't necessarily support it. But that energy has to go somewhere, and being able to process that in a way that works for you. I don't care if you got to beat a pillow, smash china plates on a wall, whatever it is, get the energy out, you know, go play b-ball. I don't care, whatever it is, you know, it makes a difference. And that I know I chimed in a bit there, but I want you to finish your story. I just had to say that because that's the beginning. It's like the beginning of the end. If you start squishing it down and worrying that other people think disease, man, that'll take you out. And they don't care. They don't care. They don't care that you're trying to be likable or nice, or, you know, that you want to or don't want to wear shorts, whatever your deal is. They don't care. You know, in the end, though, it affects you. And you, like you said, you're the only one affected by it. Yeah.
And then, well, I think you chiming in actually does help, because it actually makes a poignant point towards the third portion of where it actually happened is, well, 6-7 months ago, when I'm working within education. And I think what you talk about, suppressing your emotions, you are told professionally from the one hand, you have to do it because of that notion of, if you act all nicey-nicey, they're going to take advantage, where I think you need to take that with a pinch of salt, because I think any normal human being can sniff out when you're being sincere or not. So if you're kind of play acting and having the shutters down all the time, it's like, well, you're not a robot, so you can't act like that. So I think with me, to kind of come to my point, that's where it probably hit the head and the shit hit the fan, is because I was suppressing for so long and probably putting on an act in a fact,
sure,
and not being myself.
Sure.
It obviously came to a head, and I had problems with anxiety. Obviously doubt about the depression. I was in a very low place, but managed to, I think once I came to terms with it, accepted it, I was being the new norm, whatever norm is, it's slowly but surely I've got into a better place. And in terms of, yay, I think in the better way of looking at anxiety is not a bad thing, because it's on the spectrum, really. If we put it in terms of crossing the street, well, if you have too much anxiety, you'll never would cross the street. If you didn't have enough, you'd be crazy and run in front of traffic. So I think we have that nice balance right in between, where we're in that fixed state of a flux, and being able to look at it on a situational perspective in terms of what. So I think when we look at maybe depression and anxiety, well, maybe we looked at it in the normality that we perceive everyday-to-day life, we wouldn't have a problem with it.
You said something really important back there. It's part of a three-piece formula for change, and that is, you have to first become aware of what's going on. Then you have to accept it. And acceptance is, to me, the key to peace. If you can accept what is happening or what has happened, if you can accept that, then you can move forward with action. And that's how you get change, through awareness, acceptance, and action. You get change. You just really have to be able to be aware of it. And for those who have been raised in a chaotic situation, that's normal to them. And that's the only picture we have, you know. Oh, that's life. Okay. And so there's really no indicator that's pushing to say, you need to be aware of what's happening here. This is not really good for you. But it's normal. It's how it is. Well, no, it'll show up later, you know. And I think that wherever we're challenged is where we're called to bring that equivalent amount of light or enlightenment to a dark spot in our lives, in our psyche. And then when you do that, God bless you for doing that, you have it to give it. And then you really become a gift. You can walk through the grocery store, bro, and it doesn't matter. People pick up who you are. And it speaks volumes without ever grabbing a microphone. You don't have to write a bestseller. You don't have to say anything. Who you are emanates out from that. And that confidence. And you mentioned in the past, you know, I think you used the word arrogance. But that you've, you know, sort of, you're figuring out who you are and pulling in parts and shaving off this and adding that. And life is not a process of discovering yourself. It's like a process of creating yourself and what you want to be. And, you know, what would be the most fun next? I don't know. You know, I mean, really, if you could answer that question every day and live by that, like, what a great time, right? It really becomes a matter of outlook. And there's so many people that are really depressed. And I used to be pissed off at happy people. I thought they were all faking it. I was like, I don't like that. Because I'd never seen it before. We didn't have a happy household. So, you know, these can be really foreign things to somebody. And if you can bring attention to that by just changing who you are, like I said, you don't have to do a speech, but hopefully you will be. Like, you've got that coming up for you, don't you? I'm putting it out there. You're going to be on TEDx. I'm putting it out there.
I think, well, faith, I'll put faith in terms of, as opposed to saying hopefully, because hopefully... Nah. It's a little bit of skepticism. I say,
weak.
Basically, I put in the work.
Yeah.
I put in the time and look at it from a sporting perspective that most of the time I've done. I viewed it as I said to my coach, it's a challenge. It's a daunting one. But so was making my first national teams and things like that. It was daunting. It's like, well, I want to do this. I think
I love it.
I wasn't necessarily said no my first world championships. It was not try again. How did they word it? Don't worry about this year. Let's focus on that. No. I'm gonna make it. You brought up the idea of this. It's there. I'm gonna make it into fruition. So I think having that perspective on things is one and. Of being bold, brash, go-getter. It's like, you've put this carrot in front of me. I want it.
I love that about you. And I know we just met, but I'm going to use that four-letter word. I love that about you. Because what you just did is something that I've been trying to get people to see. Is look, if you did something over here and you made it, you're still fogging a mirror. Hey, what a concept. Why not this too? Why not? You know, bold moves are made in baby steps. And if you, like you, already have a track record, no pun intended, for outstanding achievements, I mean, gosh, there's all that remains then is becoming familiar with something uncomfortable at first, because everything new at first is uncomfortable. Standing on a TEDx stage on that red dot, oh my God, that's a big deal. It's an elevated experience for sure.
Well, even...
But you'll crush it.
even other hosts have been... how would I even put the into words? Not petrified, but it's something that scares them. I think from a perspective of where I'm coming from, because I've got all that background in sports, the academia, I know physiologically it's the same response. I could be scared of it, which is okay, but. On the other hand, well, why not be excited about the opportunity to be able to do it? Because if you get it right, it puts you then on another perspective of trust, The Influence, and what's the other one I want to use? We'll use it as those two to go with, The Influence and Trust, from that perspective, because it is held in such regard. And then obviously there's Ted above it. There's Ted above it. So that one, we'll see when if we ever get to that one. But TEDx, I know so many people that have done it. It's like, well, why not me?
I love that. I love that. I could keep talking to you. You're going to have to come back on the show. I mean it. I mean, I can't wait to see what's next for you. Just have a shelf full of awards. And you're an absolute prize. Oh, I did it. There it is. I segued right into that. Where can people get in touch with you? How can they find out more about you? And your mindset is wonderful. And it's, I'm so glad you came on the show. Thank you.
It's my pleasure, Alexis. People can find me on social media, and I've made it very simple now because they're all the same. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at James O. Roberts 11. You can find, as you mentioned in the intro, my podcast, The Mindset Athlete, yes, on iTunes. Well, what was formerly iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and anywhere that you would listen to podcasts.
So guys, go check out a couple shows, subscribe, rate, and review so that his show keeps on popping up there. And it really helps the host. So that's a way you can show your support for what, you know, your passion, and it's a hobby. It's, you know, podcasting is amazing and it's only getting better. But your subscription, rate, and review, that kind of thing, guys, it really matters. So I hope that you'll support James in those ways. Do you have a website for them to go to?
My website is fitamputee.co.uk. So that's fitamputee.co.uk.
Awesome. Awesome. Any particular quotes or final, the idea you wish to share with the world, Mr. Soon-to-be a TEDx speaker?
This is one that I've probably put in a publication recently that I wrote it, and I tweaked it from my website. So I need to I need to uniform them up. I need to put what I change and put that back on the website. But it's to have an adaptable mindset in terms of to not be so fixated on your inner beliefs. It's having that notion of, well, why can't you? Why do you have to have these predisposed ideas that, be it you've either put them there yourself or somebody else has put them onto you, why can't you change? In terms of, well, I think my problems have been somewhat adverse from the outside. I looked at it be more adaptable. It's like, this is the hand I've been dealt with. How do I come up with a solution? I kind of can go under the wall, round the wall, over it, or what I like to use, and it's come up a lot with sporting ones, so it's not just me that thinks it. The athlete action mindset is to go through it. So it's come tackling the actual problem head on. And why not do that? It's, you're not actually trying to deviate from the actual problem that's arisen by, if I go left or I go right, I'm not actually solving anything. I'm trying to not having to come up with an actual solution or come up with something that's going to solve the problem. Let me deviate from it completely and let me ignore it and as if it hadn't come up. Why not tackle it head on? What have you got to lose? It's the idea of, if you, at least if you try something, you know that you have at least done attempted what you set out to do. You may like it or you may hate it, but at least you know that you actually know that by trying that out.
Yeah, people go to the extreme and they're like, well, I'm gonna die and I'm scared to die. I was like, you know, I've died before. It's actually really easy. It's harder to live. I'm God's honest truth. I mean, it really is. And It's peaceful, guys. So if you're risking big, you know, that's in your head, you're not doing something because what, you might die. That's not a bad thing. I'm just saying, it really isn't. I'm not suggesting that you should try to, but honestly, what's the worst that could happen? I mean, every one of us has made it this far, so good, ups and downs, just becoming resilient, open-minded and adaptable gets you through it all, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Thank you. Wish I could reach through the across the pond and give you a hug. You're amazing. Thank you for being on the show.
It's been my pleasure.
All right, guys. Thank you for listening to Bold Movers and Shakers, interviews that rock the boat. And I look forward to the next time that we have a chat. You can find the show on Spotify and Google Podcasts and all that happy stuff. But I love the YouTube version. And I hope you'll tune in, check it out, and please subscribe to my channel so I can have a vanity name someday. I don't want to have a bunch of numbers after it. I had to throw it in there. All right, guys. We'll talk to you again soon. Thanks again, James.